Beyond the linear position measurement, we can also perform the evaluation of an angular rotation with the explicitly devoted transducer that can also be helpful when a linear movement, maybe too long, is not measurable. We have already said in the previous lessons that all the transducers that we have seen were suitable for very short distances. We talked about 10 centimeters, 20 centimeters, no more than 1 meter. What is possible to do when we have to measure, for example, a distance like 50 meters or even more? One solution is, depending clearly if the process allows this, one solution is to transform the linear movement, the linear displacement, into a rotational one. We well know that there are devices, there are mechanisms called screws that transform a rotation into a movement along a linear rack, a gear rack. So the measurement of the linear displacement corresponds to the evaluation of many turns of a mechanical wheel. This allows us to conclude that angular position transducers are helpful both when we have to measure angular positions and when we have to measure very long linear displacement that otherwise couldn't be evaluated. The first and we can say simplest transducer that we can use in such a kind of applications is the so-called circular potentiometer. First of all, we have to say that if this kind of transducer is suitable for angular measurements, what we said before, that is transforming a linear displacement into a rotational one, because the circular potentiometer cannot measure angular rotations greater than 360 degrees. This is clear to be understood when we consider its structure, the mechanism by which it is realized, that is basically a resistor whose shape is a circle, and we have a mechanical arrow that is connected to the object that is rotating. This arrow is made by a conductive material, and due to the rotation of the object, the contact between the arrow and the particular point into the resistor that corresponds to the angular rotation creates a partition into the resistor. So if we put a power supply, typically continuous power supply, to one of the edge of the resistor and the ground to the other edge of the resistor itself, we will have basically the same situation, the same approach that we met when we described the linear wire-wound potentiometer. Similar considerations based on the application of the Ohm law bring us to conclude that the output voltage that is measured to to the in the arrow, basically connecting a wire to the arrow that is moving along the circle. This voltage is proportional to the angular rotation theta time the power supply E divided by 2π Greek. So this is a very easy, simple device that provides a relationship between the mechanical, the let's say physical magnitude that we want to measure and the electrical output that we want to bring to the microprocessor, that is linear, no limits in this sense, apart two drawbacks. The first is related to the fact that now we understand well that we can measure only one turn, only one angular rotation that goes from 0 to 360 degrees. Because if we have an object that performs more rotations, more circles than one, we cannot discriminate, we are not able to understand if that particular angle at which the arrow stops has been reached after one simple movement or after several rotations and that small movement. In other words, the transfer function of the circular potentiometer is more or less the one that is represented into the slide 18 in the right lower part, into which you can appreciate a linear slope that starts from zero and arrives to 360, and then for greater angles replicates the behavior. Because it is clear that if we perform a rotation equal to, let's say, 20 degrees, and if we perform a rotation of 380 degrees, for what concerns the output of the potentiometer, okay, it is the same thing, and the voltage will be the same. This is the ambiguity of such a kind of device. So only this interval corresponding to 0 and 2π Greek can be measured. The second drawback, the second problem, that is the reason for which I said that this diagram, this graph, more or less corresponds to the real characteristic of the transducer, is related to the fact that it is not possible to measure 0 and 2π Greek, indeed. But in the rotation, the arrow should start from a little angle greater than 0 and stops in a little angle smaller than 2π Greek, smaller than 360. And this is due to the fact, as you can appreciate in the figure that represents more or less, in this case it's true, the equivalent circuit of the potentiometer, the 0 and the 2π Greek position can be reached only if the two wires connected to the ground and to the power supply are very close, so as basically they are in short circuit, they are connected. And clearly this is not possible to assure the proper and the correct activity of the transducer. So we stop a few degrees before 360, we start very few degrees after beyond zero, and this is, okay, a limitation that must be accepted. So we can conclude that this kind of device is very suitable for those angular movements that feature short rotation, short angular displacement around a steady position, like an object would oscillate, even if we have to take into account that oscillations, of course, must be not so fast, otherwise the mechanic response of the transducer could be not exactly suitable for such a kind of movement. Since it is the potentiometer, it is very similar to the first one we have seen in the linear position movements, in the linear position measurements. We can repeat for such a kind of a transducer those considerations that are related to the output impedance. Also in this case, the output impedance is a variable. It will be maximum in the half of the potentiometer, that is 180 degrees, and it will be minimum at the two edges, close to zero and close to 360. So this is a good reason to put after the potentiometer a buffer electronic circuit, just to decouple the output impedance of such a kind of transducer, that I repeat is variable, from the input impedance of the devices that we can connect between the transducer and the microprocessor. A buffer will have an infinite input impedance and a very neglectable, very low output impedance, so we can conclude that the independence between the transducer and all the circuits eventually following it is in this condition assured in a very reliable way. Another example of a transducer that allows a very accurate measurement of an angular rotation, together with, in some cases, the possibility of measuring more than one turn, and even to understand the direction of the movement, is provided by the encoders. Encoders are based on an optical principle that make usage of a wheel, of a disc plate, equipped with windows transparent to the light, interchanged with others that are opaque. The light is provided by a diode, a light emitting diode, that is located in a certain part of the transducer. The LED is well aligned with a light sensible transistor called phototransistor or photomultiplier. This kind of transistor is a normal transistor whose base, when lighted, brings in activity the transistor, so a current will cross the two poles called collector and emitter. This means the transistor corresponds to a logical device that will provide a binary information in output. This binary information corresponds to the state of the transistor that, when lighted, is characterized by the passing of a current, and when instead not lighted, is completely off. So we can associate, for example, the level the logic level 1 to the activity of the phototransistor, to the passage of the current, or the logic level 0 to the situation into which the phototransistor is off. Between the LED and the phototransistor, we have several crowns, concentric crowns, that made the overall wheel, we have said, constitutes the encoder. These crowns are characterized by a series of windows, as we said, alternatively black and white, that is transparent or not to the light. So, due to the rotation, the light that is emitted by the LED is blocked or is allowed to pass, depending on the particular rotation that the object connected to the encoder features. As you can see in the figure shown in slide 19, the encoder basically is a wheel rotating on a shaft that is connected to the object of which we want to measure the rotation amount. In slide 20, we have a view of the crowns that constitute the encoder, and in particular we are looking at the so-called absolute encoder, that is one of the two possible versions of the encoders transducers that we can find into the market. The absolute encoder is based on the following principle. We have a few crowns, concentric crowns. For example, the figure that we are looking shows four concentric crowns, into which, as we said before, we have a sequence of windows, black and white. The general idea is that the rule by which the windows black and white alternate is not random, but follows a particular algorithm. Looking better inside at the crowns we have in figure in the slide number 20, we see that the most external crown has one window black followed by one window white, then another black, then another white, and so on. I remember that black means not transparent and white means transparent to the light. The second crown going from the external part towards the center of the encoder features again an alternative sequence of black and white windows, but we have two white windows followed by two black windows. Then again two white and two black, and so on. The third crown is characterized by four windows white followed by four windows black. Then again four windows white, and finally four windows black. Finally, the last internal crown is characterized by a group of eight consecutive white windows followed by eight consecutive black windows. So we have four crowns, concentric. The rule through which black and white windows alternate is different from the external part toward the center. We have to imagine that behind the screen, behind the disk that we are looking, there is a group of LEDs, one LED for every crown we are considering. And from our side, we have to imagine that four corresponding phototransistors are present. So, every phototransistor will be lighted or not, depending first on the rotation of the encoder, second on the particular rule that is followed by the crown corresponding to itself. The first, the most external, let's say, phototransistor will be lighted one window of yes and one window of no. The second one will be lighted every two windows. The third will be lighted every four windows. And the last one, the most internal one, will be lighted by eight windows consecutively, or four, eight windows consecutively, and then it will be not lighted, it will not receive light for the rotation corresponds to other eight windows. Since every phototransistor provides a binary information, we said that we can associate that when the transistor is crossed by a current, we can have a logic 1 in output. Instead, when the transistor is not lighted, we have a 0, in a logic 0 in output. It is clear that every window, black or white, corresponds to a 1 or 0. More specifically, a white window corresponds to a 1 and a black window corresponds to a 0. So, looking at the figure that we have in slide 20, we can say that taking the first sector, that is the part of the disk that is numbered with 0, that is characterized by four black windows going from the external part towards the center. In that sector will correspond, if read, if acquired by a microprocessor, to a sequence of values equal to 0. The sector that is immediately after the previous one features a group of three windows black and one windows white. So it corresponds to 001. The third sector will have two black windows, one white window, and one black again windows. So 0010, that in binary corresponds to 2. And so on. We have in this case, consider that this is an example. It is not true that all the encoders are built like this, but this is a particular choice, into which we decide to have four crowns. So we divided the external crown and all the other crowns concentric to it in 16 windows. Of course, each sector is made up by more windows, by in this case four windows, because we have four crowns, whose size clearly diminishes from the external part of the encoder towards the center. The external windows is the largest one, then the size is a little bit lower, and the minimum size is corresponding to the internal part, to the internal crown. We will see that this could represent a drawback, a problem, but let's talk about it later. Now, we have to consider that the position of the LEDs and of the phototransistor corresponds, I don't know if it is visible in the slide, to that dotted red line, vertical line, that is put between the sector 15 and the sector 0. This is fixed position, this is a reference point, so every couple LED and phototransistor is located in that point of the transducer without the possibility of moving from it. It is clear that corresponding to the rotation of the disk and clearly of the object connected to the disk, with respect to this point, to this red reference point, at the end of the movement, we will have a codification, a binary codification of the new position that has been acquired by the object. In this case, the situation identifies the passage from the sector 0 to the sector 15 if we are rotating towards right clockwise, or vice versa if we are rotating counterclockwise from the position 0 to the position 15. Clearly, the rotation can be wide more than one sector, so we can start, for example, from the sector 0 and we can end in the rotation to the sector 9. What it is very important is that the resolution, the precision of the encoder, depends on the number of the crowns that we can include in such a kind of device, that in turn establishes the number of the windows that each crown features. Clearly, in such a case, we have a very raw, very poor, we could say, resolution, because you see that the overall angular rotation is divided in 16 slices, so every sector corresponds to a rotation equal to 22.5 degrees. This is not a good accuracy, but the example that we have considered is only let's say for learning purposes. The real encoders that we can find into the market will feature even to hundreds of windows per every crown. So, for example, let's imagine to have an encoder with 10 concentric crowns. In that case, we will have 1,000 external windows, or better, we will have that every crown is made of 1,024 windows, so the accuracy is amazing high in this case. We will have less than 1 degree. Perfect. In this case, we can say that the accuracy is even too much for the real industrial purposes that we can deal with. It is important. I don't know if when I was talking this concept has been captured, to highlight, to notice that depending on the number of the crowns that we fix, let's call it N, the number of the windows that will be put in each crown is 2 power N. And that basically this device brings, or let's say produces, a binary codification of the angular position that an object assumes due to its own rotation. The This device is very popular, is very simple. As you can see, it provides a digital, a binary output, so it doesn't need any electronic circuit to be connected between the transducer itself and the microprocessor. No conversion, no analog to digital conversion, as we will see in the next lessons for every other kind of transducer we will describe. However, there are some drawbacks. The first problem is related to the correct perception of the light. In fact, probably in this kind of example, it is not so very appreciable, but you will understand that when the size of the windows becomes smaller, the external windows are in any case larger than the more internal ones. This means that for every one, it is different the width, the amplitude, I mean, of the window through which the light can pass. And clearly, this produces effects that sometimes are misleading. For example, you will understand that in the external window in sector 15, just to take an example, we can have a very large area into which the light can pass and can shot the photo transistor. Instead, the internal, the most internal window corresponding to the most internal crown is considerably shorter, considerably smaller than the external one. Looking at this figure, more or less, we can say that it is half the external one. But think that in this case we have large windows because we choose only few windows, 16. But if you consider hundreds or thousands of windows, this effect will be even larger, even more important. This means that the light in the most internal window will have a very short time to pass, I mean, because the amplitude of that window is very small, and will become, depending on the rotation of the encoder, will become not possible to allow the passage of the light sometimes, even shorter in time than with respect the external one that is more, that is wider. This brings a problem, that is the commutation of the bits, that is of the logic binary informations related to every window, sometimes doesn't happen contemporaneously at the same moment. And this is a problem. In fact, if you consider sector 15, and if you consider a rotation clockwise, that is, before we have zero, every window is black. After the rotation we have 15, that is, every window is white. If the commutation of the bits is not contemporaneous, the acquisition from the microprocessor point of view could be very misleading. Because, for example, we can pass from 0 to from 1 to 0, or in this case vice versa, from 0, that is all the blacks, to 1, not in the same moment. The internal window will become white, will become transparent, maybe a moment, a short moment before what happens in the external window. But this is a problem, because that bit will become zero before then the external bit. So if the microprocessor reads it in the wrong moment, instead of reading that from 0 we are passed to 15, it will be read that from 0 we are passed, for example, to 1000, that is to 8. And this corresponds in terms of error on the identification of the angular position to an error equal to 180 degrees. That is clearly not acceptable. The problem is due to the fact that all the bits should change, should perform a commutation at the same time, but this is not always possible, depending on the accuracy, on the number of the windows we have chosen. So, a more popular and diffused version of the absolute encoder features a similar structure, a similar, let's say, architecture with the same number of the crowns, again a division of the crowns in windows, windows that are black or white, but that instead of performing a classic binary codification of the angular position, like shown in the disk in the left part of the slide, so 000, 001, 0010, 0011, and so on, implements a gray codification of the same angular positions. Gray is a particular algorithm into which every binary codification is different with respect to the next one or the previous one by only one bit. So every time a rotation happens, the passage from one sector to the next one, independently if the rotation is clockwise or counterclockwise, the change in the windows, the change between black windows and white windows will include only one window and not, like in the previous example, four in the worst case. Clearly, this limits the problem or even solves it, because we cannot have any ambiguity in this case, since the most of the windows will remain as they are, but only one will change. So there is no possibility of a wrong acquisition, because only one bit is modified, and we have only to wait that the microprocessor reads that bit, and we will have the correct identification of the new angle. Clearly, the software inside the microprocessor needs to know such a kind of new relationship between the binary number that has been acquired and the angular position, so as to avoid every kind of mistakes. This is the first drawback provided by the encoder, and as you can see, it is easily solved. Other limitations are due to the fact that if more than one turn is performed by the object, this kind of encoder doesn't provide a useful information. In other words, we have the same problem as in the angular potentiometer. If we go, for example, from a position that initially is corresponding to the sector 1, and at the end of the rotation will correspond to the sector 13. We are not able to understand if the rotation that brought us in that final position has been done inside one turn or after repeating several rotations equal to 360 degrees plus the delta rotation that brings from 1 to 13. This is the first ambiguity we have, but there is also an ambiguity in terms of direction. Even if the rotation is within one turn, is within one 360 angular movement, do we reach 13 starting from 1 by rotating clockwise or by rotating counterclockwise? The absolute encoder doesn't help us to understand this. Okay, it would be possible to equip the absolute encoder with external sectors so as to count on this external sector the only window, for example, that is black, while all the other windows are white, and in such a way we would be able to understand if more turns have been performed during the rotation. This could solve, for example, the problem of repetitive turns that typically absolute encoders don't solve. But in any case, the correct direction would be a real problem, a real issue to be determined. The solution in this case, I repeat, I mean that it is necessary to use such a kind of approach if we need to understand clockwise or counterclockwise. If we are sure that the rotation is always in one direction, there is no motivation to avoid absolute encoders. But if we have to satisfy this kind of requirement, another kind of encoder is provided by the market and is called incremental encoder. Incremental encoder is very similar to the absolute one, except instead of featuring as many crowns as are the bits that are brought to the microprocessor, only two crowns, one concentric to the other, are considered. The two crowns are made of windows, again transparent and opaque to the light, and again, like in the absolute encoder, we have two couples of LEDs and the phototransistor properly aligned, so as when between them there is a black window, the light doesn't pass, the phototransistor is not active, and the logic signal brought to the microprocessor is a zero. Instead, when a white transparent window is between the LED and the phototransistor, the light shuts the phototransistor and a suitable current crosses it, so as a logic 1 is sent to the port of a microprocessor. As you can see in slide 22 in the figures, the sequence of the windows, external and internal, are not aligned as before, but are shifted, and the amount of the shift corresponds to half a window, or if you want, to 1/4 of the period of the signal, of the pulse train signal that every crown, every phototransistor will send to the microprocessor. If we call A and B, the two channels, the two sequence of signals that are sent to the microprocessor correspondingly to the external crown and the internal one, it is easy to understand that due to the rotation clockwise or counterclockwise of the encoder, the shape of these signals is like a pulse train, because it corresponds to a sequence of commutations between 0 and 1 and 1 to 0 accordingly to the passage from a black window to a white one, or vice versa. Now the issue is how it is possible to establish the direction of the rotation. In other words, if the rotation is clockwise or counterclockwise. This is very simple and easy to understand, because let's look at two sequences of pulses related to the two different rotations. The first one in slide 22 identifies a clockwise rotation because, looking at the disk, we understand that a clockwise rotation corresponds to a movement in the sense, in the direction indicated by the yellow arrow. If the reference point into which the two couple of LEDs and photomultipliers are mounted, that is the same red dotted line we have used in the previous case in the absolute encoder explanation, is the point, I mean, into which we are detecting the passage and the movement and its direction, we clearly see that looking at that axis and concerning the channel A, that is the external crown, we are passing from a window white to a window that is black. This corresponds to the passage from a signal that is 1 to a signal that is 0. In other words, it corresponds to a falling edge in the pulse train. Corresponding to this falling edge in the channel A, the channel B, the signal given by the crown B, is in the middle of a high pulse, that is a high level, since in that moment the window that corresponds to the red dotted line is a white one, and we are exactly in the half of that window due to the shift between the external and the internal crown. This means that the clockwise rotation is identified in a very unique way by the contemporaneous situation of being on the falling edge of a pulse in the A signal, corresponding to the half of a high pulse in the signal B. A similar situation, but with a slight modification, can help us to identify the counterclockwise rotation. Because in this case, the yellow arrow will be oriented in the opposite, in the reverse direction, and again, considering the red line as the reference point, in that moment we are passing, considering the channel A, from the darkness to the light, that is, from a window that is black to a window that is white. And this corresponds in terms of signal from passing from a low level to the high level. In other words, we are on a rising edge of the pulses Instead, the position of the internal crown, the B channel, is always the same as before. That is, we are in the middle of a white window corresponding to a high level of a pulse. So it is clear to identify that a clockwise rotation is when A goes down and the value assumed is different from B, while a counterclockwise is when it's identified by a commutation, an edge on A, where the values assumed by A and B are equal. This is not the only condition that we can identify, but it is clear, the method, it indicates clearly the way. In slide 23, a small table is shown where we can identify the two signals that in the table are indicated as S1 and S2 as corresponding to the channel A and B. And S3 is the corresponding action that must be done when we have identified a clockwise rotation or a counterclockwise rotation. In fact, by establishing an association between the number of clockwise rotation we have detected and in clockwise sense or in counterclockwise sense, and the increment or a decrement of a suitable counting value in the code of a microprocessor, we can set the amount of the rotation performed by the object connected to the encoder, together with the direction into which this movement took place. The convention proposed by the table is that when we are rotating clockwise, we will increment the counting value. When we are rotating counterclockwise, we will decrement the counting value. The table clearly identifies the interesting situations depending on the edge and the values assumed by the signals into the two channels. In particular, if we are looking at a positive edge in the channel A, in the signal coming from the external crown, we will see that if the edge is positive, when the value assumed by A is different from the value assumed by B, the rotation is clockwise. Instead, when on a positive edge in A we have an equal value between A and B, the rotation will be counterclockwise. If we are looking to the negative edge in A, we can have similar considerations, because looking at the pulse train, we see that A, in case of falling edges, becomes 0 and B is 1. So again, in case of an edge in the A channel, if the final value is different from B, the rotation is clockwise, otherwise it's counterclockwise. Accordingly, the table in figure 23 proposes the increment or the decrement of the counting value on the basis of the convention we have established. Similar considerations can be done also looking at the commutations in channel B. That is, if B features a positive edge, and if the final value of B is equal to A, this is a clockwise rotation, so the variable must be incremented, must be augmented. And instead, if the commutation positive or negative in B will bring B to a different value from what has been assumed by A, the rotation will be counterclockwise and the counting value should be decremented. Clearly, every pulse corresponds to an angular displacement. In other words, we can say that every pulse corresponds to a window and will be as much accurate as the number of the windows in the crowns we are considering is high. But the real resolution of the encoder is even better, because since we are able to detect both the edges on A and the edges on the B channel, we are able to understand if a distance equal to the distance in time between a edge in A and a edge in B has been crossed, and this distance corresponds to half a window. So to evaluate the resolution of the encoder, we can set or establish the number of the windows in every crown we are considering and multiply by 2 this number. The resolution in angular degrees will be 360 divided by this number, divided by 2 times the number of the windows present in one of the 2 crowns. We are also able, by simply looking at the shape of the pulses, to establish if an inversion in the rotation is in progress. And this is clearly shown again in the figure of slide 23, because you can see that when the direction is changed, the time distance between 2 pulses becomes suddenly shorter than before. Correspondingly, the duration of one pulse in one of the 2 channels we are considering becomes longer than before. The contemporaneous situation that can be detected in one channel, shorter distance, and in the other channel, longer duration of the pulses, help us both at the first sight, but even codifying this in a suitable software program of a microprocessor, to establish the moment into which the inversion took place. Finally, we said that encoders typically exit digitally. That is, they provide a set of pins, a set of bits in output that can be immediately connected to the port of a microprocessor to be read, to be acquired, and to be also processed. This is typical in the industrial applications, with a unique remark that if the rotation is very fast, the microprocessor would need to continuously acquire the sequence of the pulses. This is a consideration that we have already done in the previous lessons. No industrial phenomena, no physical phenomena typically exist too fast for the microprocessor capability of acquiring signals. But this is not the best way to use such an important resource in our control chain. So when the velocity increases, augments beyond a certain limit, it could be a better choice to use a counter that acquires those pulses, upgrades a suitable internal variable, and reading this variable on a sample by sample basis from a microprocessor to establishing with the necessary periodicity the entity of the angular displacement of the object to which we are interested.